Everybody would like to come in and take a seat, please.
Then what's up with someone thinking my birthday party was here?
We'll have to move.
That's for me.
Downstairs, we do have some more chairs over here that we can put out. We'll see how it goes. I'd like to call this land use meeting to order. It's about 2:32 now. Try to stay on track and on agenda today. Let the record reflect Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Sheldon, Smiley, Bell, Hollins, Weiner, Cartier, Councilwoman Diller, my co-chair Retta, my aide Valerie is taking the notes. Can I have a motion on the minutes, please?
So moved to adopt.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are adopted. We have had a request from General Manager Ms. Fogarty to do her presentation because it's in regards to the ordinance that we'll be hearing tonight for the removal of the monies for the presentation of land use and the consultants, but I'm going to need a motion to go out of order.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so moved. GM?
Thank you very much. Okay, so I don't need to speak into the microphone. Good afternoon. We have a much bigger audience than I anticipated. Hello, everybody. I'm delighted to be here with the council, and hopefully this will be the first of several presentations and discussions with the council on land use issues. I'd like to talk very briefly about the past 4 months. The other day, the county exec said to somebody, I've been here for a year. I said, no, 4 months. The past 4 months, the assessment we've taken of the Department of Land Use Planning and how we look forward to working together with the council as we go forward. First, we've undertaken a thorough assessment of our programs, of not when I say our policies, our processes, specifically development review process, and also we've completed a time and motion study. In doing this, we have looked to all of you, the boards, tremendous number of people in the private sector, a few of whom are here this evening, state, we've had several meetings with the state, institutions, nonprofits, all to anticipate what do people see as success, what do people see as missing, where is there some common ground was one of the underlying themes I was looking for between the business and the residential community. So successes, when I first, before I first started, Councilman Weiner said to me, oh, you're going to love New Castle County. We've got areas that have great architecture, fine detail and quality, a lot of amenities, historic and community character. He was right. When I had ridden around and several people have helped me to see the entire county, you've got these incredible projects. There are also projects that, while they may seem small, they're really well done. I mean, the Wawa in Claymont, I know Wawa has its own, because they've talked to me, their own feelings about it, but it's a gorgeous looking project, a mixed use project. And this tree here on the right is, this is a site of a dollar store fairly recently. The dollar store came in with a lot of variances. We wound up not supporting it. The Board of Adjustments didn't support it because the trees were going to go down. That entire neighborhood was going to be exposed to really to Route 4. And the dollar store came back. They've got a great application, fits on the site, saves the trees, neighborhood protected. So a success. We move from our successes to what are our challenges. Challenges are in several areas. First, the big picture. You all have a very good, or we all have a very good comprehensive plan. Tremendous, tremendously positive policies in there. The question is, how do we implement them? How does one policy take precedent over another policy? What we don't have is a clear policy direction or an action strategy. Okay, if we're going to revitalize the corridors, what does that mean? How do we go about doing it? How do we go about attracting businesses? How do we apply some of these great ideas? How do we apply them to individual projects? then moving from the broader picture to the process, our process, and almost everyone said this to me, citizen, developer, our process is reactive. Almost all processes across the country are. But where you see great cities or great counties, actually Charleston, South Carolina comes to mind, where you've had a mayor there, Mayor Riley, for 26 or 30 years now, where they've had a proactive process, you see much healthier communities. When I say reactive, we react on a piecemeal basis to proposals, which limits the council's ability, our ability, to coordinate benefits, infrastructure, amenities. And in some cases, because we haven't sat down ahead of time and said, where do we want our economic growth to take place, we foreclose opportunities for future investment. Another challenge, which I heard really on the top of most people's lists, is the fragmented transportation approach. We've got separate agencies, state and county. Transportation is not integrated with land use, and by that I don't mean it ignores land use, but transportation policy is set. You know, the road programs are set when funded, and they are integrated in a very general way. In other words, they, you know, they look at generally where the county has said it's going to grow, but they're not integrated in a specific way. In other words, how do we create large jobs or replace large jobs and provide alternative mobility choices so that we don't have gridlock? What about the relationship between not having adequate alternative transportation modes and density? So there are a whole variety of issues here that it's not as simple as it's two separate agencies. We have a prescriptive, by design, unified development code. We have fewer zoning districts. We have fewer zones. All of this was intentional. Much of the code is actually very good. It's very clear. For by right projects, it provides certainty. But going through the process, particularly if someone was a rezoning, very costly, very time consuming. But I think the most difficult part is we don't necessarily get the results we want. In other words, if there are certain types of projects or certain uses, we don't necessarily reward those. I had a developer come to me a couple of months ago. He showed me this great, beautiful, proposed shopping area in the town center. This was Jerry Heisler, sure, no secret. And I said, oh, this is great. Well, you know, how can we help you? What can we do? And he said, well, that's not what I'm going to build. And then he brings out this kind of strip mall, and he says, this is what I can do by right in one-third the time. Why would I do this? So that's part of the issue that we have. We have to be a little more outcome-driven than strictly rule-driven. So together with the council, what is our challenge? And I dislike this word, but I will use it. And it's creating a sustainable approach to our future economy, economic health, quality of life, and vitality. And all the word sustainable, it's one of these planning words, all it really means is that we're sustainable from a social standpoint. People can have daycare services, or they can age in place. They can have active facilities and centers to go to. We're sustainable from a physical standpoint. We have some of the open space people need, trails people need, we have safe sidewalks, and we're sustainable environmentally. We're reducing some of the greenhouse gas pollution and the other pollution, and we're preserving some of our great environmental amenities. So where do we want to go? The things I've listed up here are all comments I've heard from each one of you. And I could go around and attribute each one, but I won't. We need a vision of where the business, residential communities, have areas of agreement for the future. And I think that that is very possible. Everyone talked about protecting and enhancing individual neighborhoods, creating active, vibrant places. When I say safe access and amenities, that also means neighborhoods, like a neighborhood off Route 9, where they may have services, but those services are in no way the retail services of the quality that people in other areas of the county have. How do we revitalize our corridors, provide affordable housing, which is an issue for today's agenda, get and keeping as important good jobs and creating transportation choices. Again, I've heard this across the board from everyone here. So working with the council, and I say that not gratuitously, it's critical, because if we're not working with the council, we're not achieving anything, we're not going forward. What are some of the initial strategic actions that we've identified? And again, these are just the initial things that we know we're going to be doing the rest of this winter, the spring, and into the summer. I think the first is transforming the department. The department has actually some incredible staff. Very sadly, we're going to be losing about four of our very senior staff to retirement. I keep telling them, you don't want to retire, it's boring. You know, you need to stay, but they don't believe me. So we need to transform the department from just being reactive to what comes before it to being proactive. An example of proactive, we had a company the other day, a corporation, that wants to add some facilities to their site. And what they wanted to do, they technically couldn't do. We spent time with them and a great deal of time amongst ourselves figuring out how to get them to where they needed to be so that they keep those jobs on that site. And they're here in the future. How do we transition from a regulatory system where in many ways, and not by design, but by process, where we're inhibiting people to incentivizing not just good jobs, but also a very high quality of life. Because for good investment, people, corporations, as well as individuals, look at the quality of life that's offered. How do we get desired outcomes, and how do we really bring land use together with transportation so that we don't have these bifurcated processes? Well, the first of about seven specific strategies is I'll speak to this one while they're fixing it. The first is economic development. The county has invested in an economic study, which is taking place right now. And we really have two aspects. One is keeping our existing businesses, figuring out what they need to be retained. This makes me nervous. What they need to be to stay here. What are we doing so that we're not driving them off? How do we make it easier? But then how do we find new businesses? What sectors want to be here? Then what are the ingredients they need to come? And then how do we provide the incentives for the sectors? Let me just ask you. Okay, good, good. One button. This is why I don't touch these things. So secondly, along with unique economic development, we've talked about streamlining the process. We need a process that's clear. Everyone would agree with that. Timely. One that ensures, you know, early input from the community, and one that is more concurrent rather than sequential. In order to achieve that, one of the main things we need to do is revamp our process with DLDOT. This is just a snapshot of the time and motion study we did for the department. Green is the county, yellow the applicant, purple the state. What there are several things that we can do differently, but one of them that is glaring is it takes almost a year to go through the traffic impact study process. We need to have much greater coordination with DLDOT where we're doing things concurrently, not in a sequential fashion. And we also, it would be easy to say, well, it's all somebody else's fault. Underneath the speed, there are a lot of very heavy issues, meaning exactly how are we going to bring in and fund alternatives. Moving on its own. So that's, you know, DLDOT is one of the areas we're going to work with, but the other is our own building and inspection process to bring in the software and the hardware so that, and it is not that expensive relative to the outcome, so that we actually can do things in real time. You bring in an application, you submit it. Instead of it going to different agencies, everybody's reviewing it at the same time. Everybody's tracking it in real process. You're getting your inspection in real time. You're getting your inspection in real time. All of this adds up. So we have economic development and streamlining actions that need to take place. But as importantly is making sure that we are, as we go forward, shaping, whether you want to call them healthy or sustainable, but communities where people want to live is the simple English. How do we ensure that the new development benefits and fits in with the community? Picture on the right is downtown Santa Cruz, California. The thing that's interesting about this picture, it looks very lively, lots of people, lots of activity. The downtown fell down in the Loma Prieta earthquake, literally flattened. I went out there a couple years after the earthquake, which was good, because by the time I got there, they'd kind of gotten the rubble out of there. But we, meaning the council, all kinds of people, rebuilt that downtown. We targeted sectors because nobody wanted to come. We couldn't. Macy's drove over for a meeting with the mayor, and they drove through town, and they left. They didn't even cancel the meeting. We were all sitting there. They just left. So if you can take a city that on one side had ocean, on two sides had mountains, and was rubble, and you ought to see it today. It's active. It's lively. It looks fantastic. But there was a lot of effort put into that. If you can do that, you can do that anywhere. The county does an incredible job on the left-hand side on providing parks and amenities, outside activities for its citizens. And the most basic, we've got great neighborhoods, let's protect them, let's enhance them, let's make sure that some of the things that are character defining, such as the Route 100 corridor, that we keep that in place. So how do we do all of that? Well, one of the first steps is identifying the common principles. And when I go through this, you can think to yourself, most of these things are things that people are going to agree with the business and the residential communities. And I think there are going to be a lot of areas of difference, but a lot of areas that are common. The next is not just looking at countywide initiatives. Affordable housing is certainly countywide. Zoning incentives for economic development is countywide. But we have a lot of areas, agricultural incentives, looking at the scenic corridors, revitalizing a corridor plus an area like Route 9. And before I took the job, Councilwoman Diller said to me, we need to reinvest in vacant and underutilized shopping centers. This is a major issue. We have this all over the county. Revising the Unified Development Code is what all of these other actions lead up to. Right now, we're identifying what are some of the barriers. We need to figure out the barriers, do all the things we've just talked about, which is really working on both incentives for jobs and business, as well as ensuring that we've got a healthy community, and ultimately provide the county the ability to entice investment and manage change in ways that benefit everyone. Thank you. Questions? Discussion?
Well, thank you. That was very, very informative, and super. We definitely have a vision there. It's going to be very a lot of lively discussion in the days to follow. Questions for members of council? Co-chair Retta.
Thank you, Arlene. On the one slide you had up there about the electronic, where everybody's going to be involved, which would be BellDOT and the planners and everything. Is there going to be a time frame where they're all going to be looking at this computer to where, or are they going to be doing it on their own at their leisure?
What?
So it had to be coordinated.
It has to be highly coordinated. And what would happen is, it's, you're talking to someone who can barely do email. So with that understood, it would be we're getting software. And they're looking, the staff has been looking at 4 or 5 different kinds of software. But essentially, as the application comes in, it would like be immediately available to all of you. Then what should happen is we would set up a meeting that day, the next day. Everybody talks, they've got it in front of them, it doesn't have to be distributed. It all comes back into real time. So that if, let's say, police have a conflict with DelDOT or, you know, something, that gets discussed, and you take actually several weeks out of the process up front. But then in the process itself, what I have found, where we've introduced the whole electronic approach elsewhere, and this is just human nature, now it's very obvious to everybody in the universe who has it. That has a great effect on timeliness, because when it's lost in the system, it's somebody else's fault. If anybody can pull that computer up and say, Janet's got it, I don't have it, it in itself will be have a great effect. And then with the inspectors, they're very excited, because they can go out and in the field, they can communicate with the developer or the builder. And rather than sending things back, rejecting things, going back to NPM.
Thank you.
Also, just a little bookkeeping here. President Bullock and Councilman Street did join us in the presentation. Thank you. Councilman Weiner and then Councilman Cartier.
Thank you. General Manager Fogarty, thank you for the work that went into this. Thank your department. Please ask the four planners not to leave.
I told them it's very boring.
Great.
They don't want to retire.
And it's your presentation, for those of us that have gone to Smart Growth New Urbanist presentations for 20 years, is textbook. And it applies not only everywhere, but you specifically applied it here, and I want to applaud you for that. As a past chairman of National Association of Counties, a Smart Growth Committee and Land Use Committee for 8 years, you've integrated the legs of Smart Growth, the integration of land use and transportation. Number two, economic development. And number three, social equity. And as we are fond to say, it's both a left-wing and a right-wing conspiracy at the same time. It's good for the environment. It's good for equality of all human beings. And it's good economically. When you got developers building compactly, they pay a lot less for infrastructure. And when you don't build on cul-de-sacs that are not connected, then when you come out to that cul-de-sac, whether it be on one road or another, and you're in traffic jam, you have to ask, who's at fault here? Did the planners sort of succumb to the constituents that didn't understand sound land use planning because they were being reactive rather than proactive? Because as Pogo said, we've met the enemy and they are us. So we need land use to be proactive and to play that role, and the planning board as well. As far as the MOU requiring concurrency, the State Department of Transportation agreement with Newcastle County, first let me applaud the Gordon administration for not accepting the Delta new regs, which I supported. But it's a matter of leveraging the county ability to approve land use projects, because once we agree to that without preconditions, we're transferring development rights to developers who aren't sharing the current cost of complete streets, whether it's pike bed friendliness or roadway infrastructure. Just to point out that basically what the new regs do by creating a traffic shed or like a watershed or a traffic impact district, it says in monopoly terms, you pay $200, pass go, you don't go to jail. And if that's going to be done, we need to do it with open eyes, because what you're doing is you're passing on to some future generation, 20, 40 years, whoever, about the traffic congestion or other issues that need to be. And having said that, LOSE is a most welcome tool if you're building a pedestrian precinct, but we need to use it carefully. We don't want to supplant the central business district of Wilmington, which has 3 million square feet, with a suburban site called, for example, Barley Mill Plaza, which has been proposed for 3 million square feet. And lastly, I just want to say, when I was chairman of the NACO Smart Growth Committee, when we took our best practices tour out to Santa Clara, it just emblazoned me with the idea, yeah, we could do this here in New Castle County. Thank you for echoing that fact.
Councilman Cartier.
I want to, you know, applaud Ms. Fogarty for having the, you know, the vision to take on this recalibration of our land use policies in the county. I think we need to do that. We probably need to do it on every decade or so. I guess for me, sitting as chair since 2004, the two things that I will say, I think it's almost impossible to get consensus about land use, especially countywide. We have 400 square miles. We have communities with vastly different expectations, needs, and concerns. I've always advocated a strategy of breaking the county down into targeted areas, because within targeted communities, there are possibilities for consensus. I think the other thing we need to do, we need to bring new people around the table to discuss land use with the decision makers in this county. And I mean a much more diverse and broad sections of this county. A lot of people in this room would fit in that bill that are here today. Thank you for coming. The other thing that I want to draw attention to, it's a personal issue, the northeast part of New Castle County, which has massive infrastructure for transportation, sewer, electrical, gas pipelines, etc., the entire infrastructure you need for whatever you want to do in development, is now abandoned. The entire northeast part of this county. We continue to lose investment despite the fact that we have all of the infrastructure that we need. So how that computes, you know, it doesn't compute. But that is a reality. This Claymont Steel Mill closed, there's 400 jobs lost there. Sunoco closed, that site lies in the state of Delaware. That was 600 jobs wiped out there. Continuing loss, continuing economic abandonment, continuing underutilization. And I think that we need to focus in certain areas where we have all this infrastructure in place. There should be no issues with DLDOT reviews. We need to create streamlined processes for targeted areas that really incentivize investment. And if we don't do that, we're going to become a Rust Belt county with no opportunities for anybody. And you know, I'm going to get all worked up about it, but I think that's really where we're headed. And you know, we got to stop that, because for years this was an opportunity county for working people who had thrived and did well, but that is not the case now at all.
Okay. Additional comments from members of council? Council President Bullock, any comments for us here?
Could you provide council a copy of this presentation?
Sure.
Well done.
I tried to resist turning it over to go on the internet, because I have four or five groups over the next few weeks that I'm going to be talking to the council, since the council has seen it. It's public. They'll be glad to give it to you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Good. Good. Thank you. Councilman Weiner.
Yeah, just to make sure that I understood that we're going to get this in electronic and not paper form.
Paper right now, and then in electronic in a couple of weeks.
Great, thank you.
Good. Co-chair, wrote any comments?
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. We'll look forward to getting those copies. And
great. And then are you ready to go to the ordinance?
I just want to say, you do recognize that when you send it over in paper form, it can be scanned in and then transmitted anyway. I just tell you.
I know. Trust me. Even I have figured that out. But not quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any questions from the public on the presentation? Okay, seeing none, let's move to the next item on the agenda. We're out of order, though, so it's the second item on the agenda. That is actually the co-piece to this presentation. So I move now to the ordinance 14005. I'm going to turn this over. This is sponsored by myself and co-chair Retta, and I'm going to turn this over to the GM now for her comments as to why this is needed.
Ideally, we would have had the other presentation months before we came in and immediately asked for the transfer. But I wanted to give the council a sense of what it is we're doing. The department will have about $500,000 in salary savings this year. The reason for that is that there were there are 20 vacancies. When I first came, I wanted to assess the department, assess what are the proper places for what staff, what we need to do. So as a result of that, those positions, while we're now starting to fill them, were not initially filled. So we're requesting that of that $500,000, that $300,000 be transferred to consultant services. It's really critical for us, because all of the items we've identified, or I've identified, you know, ranging from the streamlining. When we say streamlining, we've done a lot, but now we need people to come in and actually prepare the document that doesn't say vague things like we need to be streamlined. It says this part of the process will be changed, so that here's what DelDOT will do, here's what the county will do. The detailed reports, the technological enhancements, we've done a lot of work, but now we need some support. With the economic development, there's a lot being driven by Marcus and David, but our role is to find the zoning incentives, and we need to do performance to do that. So, and I can go on, but workforce housing, we're going to need assistance with performance to actually figure out. We want to make sure that what we come up with works in the real world. That is our request.
And you want to talk a little bit about where you found the money from? I mean, you know, the financial note on there does show that it is a basically, you know, $0, because you're just transferring out of your salaries and your benefits.
It's in our budget this year, and so what we're doing is transferring it from one account, salary savings, to another account, professional services.
To actually result in a neutral.
Yes, right. Results in a zero increase.
You're not looking for extras. Questions for members of council on this ordinance? Councilman Street.
Are we going to no sooner rather than later, with specificity, what the consultant services are going to be?
I can tell them something.
Sure. Hopefully, I don't know. That's for you.
I'll go through several of them. One of the first things is bring on some people to do the next step of the streamlining, and that includes identifying all of the modifications, testing it, preparing the detailed reports, the staff procedures, and then the implementation. A second piece is doing the same with DelDOT and the state. We will do a lot of the work, but we need someone to put together the details. The issue with a lot of studies is they don't then say, and here's the procedure book of what you're going to do tomorrow. I've talked about the technological enhancements. Essentially, we've identified, I think, five software users. We're working with IT, but now we need some assistance in terms of really determining which is going to be the best and work the most efficiently. With economic development, what we need to do performers, we need some economic assistance so that when we create new districts, just as Councilman Cartier is describing, we can put incentives that actually work. Because one of the difficulties in so many land use agencies is you put incentives in, but incentives don't necessarily work. Workforce housing, the same thing, where we will be bringing in assistance so we can actually figure out, I know there are people here in Maryland who build workforce housing, exactly what are the types of incentives to trigger investment. With respect to the comprehensive plan, there are several parts. One part are the action plans, which we, the action plans. An example, we've got two that we've started, but we can do with some assistance from professional expertise. We can probably manage about five at a given time. One of them we want to be able to do is the Route 9 corridor, to really do a full study of what, and I say that I'm very familiar with it because I live near there in historic Newcastle. But what are the services? How are we going to get the local retail that people need? How are we going to provide the access? How are we going to tie that in comprehensively with the safety that is needed? That's that area. As we look at several of the areas across the state where we've got, across the state, the county, vacant and underutilized shopping centers, I know I have worked and had some success in the past with incentives, and I've also, way back, went through a process where we did a tremendous amount and the incentives weren't sufficient and we didn't get the redevelopment that we thought. So that, we really need some economic assistance to make sure that as we go to the, and look at these shopping centers, which ones do we have a shot with? Which ones should we go out and really try and market and bring in someone to really try and aggressively redevelop it? And then part of this goes to the code. The code itself will be a separate item for next year's budget. We're trying to bring what will be the price of the code down by doing all of this, but we will in this be identifying, you know, what are the barriers, what are the disincentives. But those are,
Are we going to see specifically what the contract for services are going to be prior to them being implemented, or are we saying now the department, we're just going to move $300,000 and the department does what it wants to do, consults with what it wants to do, and council has no oversight from the point at which we move the money to debt?
Yeah, my understanding is the council sees the contracts, all contracts, above $25,000. Is that correct? So you will see that.
So this will be an RFP that you'll send out for bid for any?
There are two levels. There are some of these things, for example, the technology. We hope to be able to do under 25. So there'll be some things that'll be under 25, but several of them will be part. There's a larger RFP that we've got just about ready to go. And then you will see whatever the contracts being awarded are that are over 25,000.
Will of council be the will of council, okay? But you're moving $300,000, you haven't said specifically what it's gonna be for, and you know, we're moving $300,000 like it's monopoly money, and gonna have no oversight You're not going to determine who's going to get a contract, but obviously, since they're discussing and they already know, some are going to be under 25, some are going to be over 25. They know where they're heading. We don't.
Again, I can only say that the contracts will come before the council. We know what we want to achieve. We do not know who, I have no idea who the economic people will be to help us, for example, but that will come before council to approve. But I can say without this, we are simply stalled. We have done everything we can do on our own without going forward.
If then council is going to approve individual contract by individual contract, isn't this premature then?
Well, we cannot, I cannot go forward. I have some smaller contracts, but I also need to know what I have in order to send out the RFPs, to talk to people, to get it done, and to get it done now. That's about the only way, if you want to move forward, that you're going to move forward. And I'll be glad to come, as I've said before, to finance or this committee as often as you would like to talk about each one of these areas that we're going forward on and what we're doing. There should be no reason that council doesn't know or doesn't agree with the direction.
I think we have some comments from who?
Just to add to that, the council does get a report from purchasing showing the purchase orders that are issued. As far as a purchase order cannot be issued unless there's funding in place. And then the other item is that you're the general manager at our names committee meeting, we're glad to give council updates on where they are in the stages of the process that would show the what's being spent in the purchase order being out there.
You agree to that?
Absolutely.
I have Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Councilwoman Dover.
Just one question. If and when we do these studies, I'm presuming that then each individual area would have a new code that comes over for council approval.
Yes.
I mean, this has to, so it would be broken down into amendments for the UDC.
What? It can be broken down two ways. It can be broken down into implementation of the comprehensive plan, but each one of these are going to, first of all, we're not going to go out and do a study on in Hocassin without talking with you and talking with the entire council. So doing the study would, because there are several studies and they'll be competing what gets priority. And all of that will be part of council's direction. So you will be a part of deciding. A couple of studies we've already started because they, you know, in one case it was essential to get to them. That was a study which was on the scenic byways because they were getting started and they needed our help. But on these studies, first of all, council will know what areas, because you're going to be involved in saying we think this is more important than this. And then secondly, you will see the scope when we get ready to give the contract.
But beyond that, once the contract is let and we have the study done, if what they're proposing, similar to what you had in your presentation, those things in your presentation don't necessarily fit into today's code. They would have to have Board of Adjustment, you know, visits to be able to build some of the things that you were proposing. So I guess my question is, are we looking at redoing the UDC at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Councilwoman Diller.
Yes. I really appreciate your vision. It's very exciting to me. Two areas I just want to raise up. One is the issue of transportation and economic development. Those are areas that state government really plays a major role, and we don't, to be honest with you. I'd like to piggyback on what Councilman Cartier talked about in terms of economic development. Here's the issue as far as I'm concerned. it's not just underperforming shopping centers, it's investment in those shopping centers, particularly around employers who might be inclined to go elsewhere if they don't get some assistance. So, for example, if you have an employer currently who is not considered high tech, the chances of getting assistance through the state of Delaware are pretty slim, basically because the jobs are already there. It's not considered a problem to the state if those jobs get picked up and moved to somewhere else in the county. For those of us who are living in the area where the jobs might disappear, and that retailer or shopping, grocery store is a linchpin to community stability, I think we have to revision just the way we think about economic development, and that saving jobs in some cases is just as important as creating new jobs. And so how we take that information and get buy-in from state government, I think is going to be an incredibly important part of this process, because just like transportation, economic development is something that it's very personal for communities. And you know what you think of the economic development, if an area loses a grocery store or a retailer, it can be just as devastating as moving jobs offshore for the people in that community. So how we get that connection going between the state and its vision of what economic development is and our needs for our communities, because let's face it, you have 12 people here who have individual districts, and we're all facing issues where the people in our communities are telling us about their concerns, and I don't want jobs going across the line to Maryland or Pennsylvania when my folks need those institutions in their community to sustain them.
I think that it's one of the critical, when we talk about a sustainable community. What a sustainable community means that the people in Wilmington get the same access to the services that are in your district or Councilman Cardio's district or Councilwoman Kilpatrick's, and they're at the same level. And that is simply not the case as we see some of these businesses closing, as we see businesses being cannibalized and the local serving retail disappears. And again, I know it's true in your area. I know it's true in Councilman Cardio's area. I know that whole Route 9 corridor is a classic example of there are services out there, but they are not services that one could count on being out there next week.
Got a couple more questions from members of council, and we'll try to keep the questions as brief as possible because we do have another ordinance and we have another meeting at 4. Councilman Weiner?
Thanks. I just want to piggyback off of something General Manager Fogarty said and Councilwoman Lisa Diller just said. Hearkening back to Councilwoman Diller's district, we had Potts Welding proposed for a shopping center outside the village of Newark, where we had two struggling shopping centers in the city of Newark that would only be cannibalized, to use your word, had we taken the recommendation of the previous land use department's general manager and rezoned it. I think that's the kind of vision that we need to understand. We stood instead with our fellow councilwoman and said, no, we're not going to support this for a shopping center where people would drive to rather than be able to walk to, right in the village of Newark. And having lived there for 4 years during my University of Delaware days, I relate to that. The other thing that I just want to harken back to again is the importance of us using our leverage and not giving a free ticket to DelDOT and the state that makes its money off development, whereas we are left with the reduction of quality of life so that, you know, we haven't done the MOU giveaway and signed off on the TID new Dell dot rates yet. And I think even Committee 100 would agree that we need now to leverage as much money as we can from Delta. It's a competition between the counties. Let's get the most money we can out of the deal before we sign off in any way.
Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, I'm going to be very brief. I hope that you're in touch with representatives from Dell dot, the governor's office, and everything else, because the redevelopment's not going to work unless there's a partnership. Very briefly, this past summer, we're reading about Bloom Energy, Newark, the old Chrysler site, and all this. During that time, I got a business in my district, did a $2 million redevelopment project, and I had to personally get involved and call the governor to get the medium strip in front of his business, the trash picked up, and get it cleaned. So, I mean, it's not always the big things, it's the little things that affect the businesses coming in or staying. But I'm saying, $300 million, $500 million, whatever. Unless we've got buy-in with the state and we're partnering, we're sending money down the river on a piece of wood. It just doesn't work.
The state is saying, I've met with the secretary. I talked a few times a week to the Dell dot chief planners, and I know the county exec has talked to the governor. So everyone is saying they want to do this. Now what we've got to do is get the work, get the detail together, so that when we're meeting, we're not just doing platitudes. So when we're meeting, we're really sitting down and saying, okay, here's how we research this piece can be fixed.
Okay. Additional questions, members of council? Seeing none, turning to the public.
Yeah, Bob Wasserbach, County Auditor. Thanks for the presentation. Last year, before you began as a Land Use Department General Manager, there were a couple RFPs that went out. That one was to review the UDC, and one was to review the operations of the Land Use Department. And I can't remember if anybody was ever engaged to do that work, but my question would be, were any funds spent last year?
No, and I had saw those, and I thought that funding was there, and when I went to access it, because much of this is similar, the funds had not been committed for this year. And trust me, I spent the entire Christmas vacation terrorizing people like Ed, saying, I know they've got to be there, but they were not committed for this year.
Additional questions from members of the public? Okay, thank you. Okay, now back to item substitute 1 to 13089. Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to add my appreciation to General Manager Fogarty for the excellent presentation, and I would note that on the vision to reality, the second item was affordable housing. And with that, substitute number 1 to ordinance 13089 is to place the moratorium on land use applications incorporating workforce housing incentives delineated in Article 7. We have prepared the ordinance for the moratorium. We've gone forward to the planning board meeting. I was present myself to give the presentation before the planning board, along with other interested parties, including members of the community. We had a very positive reception, I would say. All speakers agreed with my presentation and the idea of the moratorium. We went forward, and we have tried to follow, every rule, every guideline to make certain that we were completely compliant with council rules and processes. We do have a letter from, it came to all members of council from the law office of Jeffrey Weiner. Mr. Weiner has a concern with regard to the ordinance, and I'll read the final paragraph, which I said all members of council did receive this. And the final paragraph says, to the extent that substitute number 1 to ordinance 13089 does not apply to my client's application for workforce housing, then my client does not have any objection to the proposed moratorium. Otherwise, to the extent that this substitute ordinance in any way adversely impacts my client's vested right to develop its parcel for workforce housing, as plainly stated in this county law, my client hereby respectfully states its objection. I just wanted to be fair to Mr. Weiner to let him know that his letter is part of the record. I would also say that this substitute in no way impedes or violates or removes anything from any client's right. This is a moratorium that does not address any client's right. I would say that during the planning board hearing, that one of the planning board members, Mr. David Shepherd, requested that we remove the language that's in the note of the ordinance. And the language reads that all workforce housing land development plans vested prior to the adoption of this ordinance shall continue to be vested and shall be processed pursuant to the applicable workforce housing regulations and definitions. Mr. Shepherd made that request during the planning board. He questioned me during the planning board hearing, and further at the planning board business meeting, Mr. Shepherd convinced his colleagues on the planning board that it was desirable to remove that language, which they all agreed to remove the language. And they voted with their conditional approval based upon that language being removed. We do have a floor amendment for tonight, which only removes that specific language. The Land Use Department agreed with Mr. Shepherd and the Planning Board with no objection from myself, because I thought it was critical that we have the positive recommendation from the board as well as from the department. I did speak with Mr. Shepherd personally and asked him what was his rationale, as did Mr. McGlinchey during the business committee meeting. And Mr. Shepherd's response to me was that, as it was to Mr. McGlinchey, that it didn't add anything to the moratorium, because the language is already in the original legislation regarding workforce housing. So the amendment will be offered tonight on the floor. It was placed in council members' mailboxes this afternoon, and council members received electronic mail as such. We do have here today the attorney representing the Land Use Department, which can speak to the amendment, and she was also present at the board hearing and can answer some of the questions that council members may have, and I'm prepared to answer those questions as well.
Did you want to speak briefly, councilman, about the recommendation, positive recommendation you got from Land Use and the Planning Board that it was conducive to the ordinance?
Yes. Both the board as well as the department made a conditional recommendation for approval if, in fact, the language was removed that Mr. Shepherd had in question. Mr. Shepherd contending that the language didn't add anything to the ordinance, that it didn't take anything away. So I agreed, along with the department, that we would remove that language as a floor amendment. Otherwise, what you see before you is identical to what was presented to the planning board.
Thank you. Councilman Smiley.
I guess I'm a little bit different, and thank you very much, Councilman Holmes. But if it doesn't add and it doesn't take away, I don't see the need to remove it, number one. Number two, for 9 years, my limited time on council, I've repeatedly been advised that we do not legislate retroactively. By removing that, I think we are legislating retroactively, because I understand what the Land Use Department and the Planning Board have said, but I also know, based on the recent newspaper article, that the Executive Office, i.e. the Land Use Department, I guess, is taking a position that the plans that have been filed before this evening will not be considered vested. So that's an issue for me, and I'll put it very clear in a nutshell. Right now, if things go as perceived by the newspaper article, I see five developers and Newcastle County involved in a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. We pass this legislation, I see five developers, Newcastle County, and Newcastle County Council involved in a lawsuit. I don't think we need to be involved in it. If the Land Use or Executive Department wants to take a position that they're not grandfathered and they're not entitled, then let them fight it out. I don't think we should pass a piece of legislation that, by deleting a provision, would basically add credibility to that position. I would respectfully suggest we either do not do the floor amendment or as a whole, everything be tabled, let them shake out their differences as to what plans are valid and which ones aren't, and then we'll act. Because, Councilman Hollins, I applaud your willingness to work further on this, because I know how much time, how much heartache, and how much abuse you took in doing this workforce housing, and I know it's very near and dear to you. So I respect what you've done to try to, per se, meet in the middle of the road and still provide affordable housing. I just don't want to see this council pulled into the negativity of a lawsuit of what's going to happen. So that's all the comments I have on it, and that's a layman's perception.
Councilman Hollins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Councilman Smalley. The fact of the matter is, it's not necessarily what you read in the paper. The fact of the matter is that the decision to move forward with the moratorium happened several months ago. The introduction happened several months ago. What you're hearing today is something that happened after this was introduced. This legislation in no way impedes on any of those issues that you brought forward. There are a number of people in the room today who were not in favor of workforce housing in 07 and 08. As a matter of fact, vehemently opposed to it. In the last two or three weeks, now workforce housing has become the most desirable option in the UDC. That's between them and land use. Our role is county council. We're not involved. If the county is sued, they're suing whomever. But this legislation, the concern that they have, and what they will tell you is that in the code itself, that protection exists. What this moratorium is saying is that what the planning board members say is not necessary because that protection is in the code. And those folk who feel like there's some violation, or some folk who are trying to tie this moratorium into what they perceive may be a loss of revenue, a loss of their opportunity for revenue, is not of no concern to me. The fact of the matter is, I refuse to allow this piece of legislation and moratorium to be used as a negotiating tool because somehow they feel that the county executive or the land use department may or may not approve any rezonings. That's up to that department. I've worked very hard to make very clear that county council is not caught up into that. I think the land use department can speak to what may or may not happen to those particular ones that folk are concerned about, but quite frankly, those were not a part of this legislation when it was crafted, and they're not a part of this legislation tonight. This legislation does not speak to that. The issue that is being raised, and we did ask Mr. Shepard on the floor with two attorneys talking to him afterwards, after the meeting was over, to have that discussion because he had some concern. It didn't add anything. It didn't take anything away. I took the same position. So did the land use department. And the fact of the matter is, since it's now conditional, we would not have the approval if that language remained. But the concern that you have is covered in the code. So it really has no reason of being here other than some folk who may want to sue us feel that it gives them a greater opportunity if it was here. That's the only reason. But the fact of the matter is, it has no bearing. This legislation, this moratorium that I'm offering up tonight does just that. It's put a stay on the workforce housing. It allows us to have 180 days with the potential of another 90 days. And then I'll yield to counsel to the land use department to let the land use determine how they would go forward with that. But that's not a role for county council.
Can I respond? Yeah, I just want to respond. I agree. And my perceptions are mine. They aren't anyone else's. And I read the legislation itself in body, and I support it. My concern is the amendment. That's my only concern. I support it as it was, as you originally proposed. My only concern is the amendment, because again, my perception is, you know, I'm not one to always support redundancy, but confirmation of what is sometimes can be good.
Yeah, and I can confirm to you what the legislation does. I cannot confirm what land use may or may not do, or what some perception of what the county executive may or may not do. I cannot confirm that. I can tell you that I've been very clear on how and what this legislation to be presented and what I would accept and not accept. And I can tell you that there have been some suggestions out there that people know about that I refuse to allow to be a part of this legislation. This legislation is clear. It's clean. It's not contaminated. It has nothing to do with any of these issues that people are trying to attach to it. And I also refuse to jeopardize this legislation and jeopardize the opportunity for thousands of Newcastle County families to buy a home because there's five or six plans that are out there that came in week before last.
And I just want to applaud the fact that you also put a sunset provision on getting something else done.
Right.
So I appreciate that. I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilman Hollins, where are we?
She's over there.
I'm going to yield to Attorney for Land Use.
You wanted some comments?
Thank you, Councilman. Okay. We actually had...
state your name, please.
Thank you. My name is Mary Jacobson. I'm the attorney for the Department of Land Use. I'm supposed to be known as MJ. We prepared a little bit of a presentation just for the background of the ordinance. Before we address the issues that have been raised, I'd like to back up a couple steps and just broadly speak to the need for the moratorium. As many of you know, workforce housing was originally adopted in March of 2008. Within the first 8 months of adoption of the ordinance, 14 plans were submitted to the county and approved. The influx of plans, I think, created a stir in the community. And there was a moratorium adopted in December of 2008 that put a temporary stay on the workforce housing provisions, so we had an opportunity to review exactly what was going on in the influx of the plans. Back then, I think the concerns were the double density, the 100% bonus increases on the 14 plans were putting a strain on transportation and school school concurrency issues. The amendment was workforce housing provisions were amended in February 2009. Some of the incentives were pulled back somewhat. The option for rental units was pulled out, so they had to be owner-occupied. And after the amendments were adopted in February 2009, it created pretty much a lull in the submission of workforce plans. Since February 2009, we've really only received four new workforce housing plans. Overall in the county, 18 plans have been submitted. 19 plans have actually been submitted, but one was a resub of another one, so 18 original plans were submitted. Of those 18 plans, 735 workforce housing units were created. Eight of those plans have since expired because the developer chose not to pursue recordation and let the plan expire through operation of time. Today, there are only 341 workforce units designated on plans. That's through over 5 years of operation of the program. Only 31 units in the county have received COs. So over 5 years of the program, we have 31 units CO'd. Only two of those units that are CO'd are actually owner-occupied. 29 are rentals, and most of those are in apartment complexes. When the ordinance was adopted in 2008, it was anticipated that the program would generate $500,000 to $600,000 on an annual basis of contributions into the housing trust fund. As of this date, there is approximately $273 in the Workforce Housing Trust Fund as a result of workforce housing contributions. So as you can see, over 5 years of the program, it's clear that the program is not producing the desired effects. Through my time dealing with workforce housing, I have identified several issues with actual the language of the code. The ability to locate up to 50% of the units off-site presents an issue when off-site units are chosen. There's also a density transfer if they're being transferred to a SOM parcel. They also get all the other incentive waivers and bonuses that the code provides for the transferring parcel. So these plans don't really go through a review process, or those separate off-site units don't go through a review process. They can just be workforce as of right. If the plan calls for off-site units. The designation of units is tricky. I've actually had to deal with an issue with the AG's office concerning low versus moderate, and they had an issue referred to them about how we're designating our units, so it's created issues on that level. There's issues with qualified purchasers of the units. Community Services does that. It's time consuming. I met with the woman that does it and for 2 hours, and at the end of 2 hours I was still confused, and I know as much about the program as I think Allura can now. Interpretation of certain provisions of the code, and there's ambiguities in the code. We've had a request for interpretation, and I'm sure as that progresses, there'll be other issues with interpretation of particular code provisions. Councilman Hollins noted, I think in his presentation before the planning board, there's a 15-year buyback requirement. So once a buyer does get into a unit, they are not allowed to sell the unit and make a profit, because that money has to be, I think, evenly split if there is a profit between the buyer and the seller, and paid back to the county. So there are some tracking issues. It's a complicated process. It's got the actual code language itself has some issues, and implementation of the program, I think, has some issues. The ordinance went before planning board in December. As Councilman Hollins spoke to it, the planning board had a recommendation that the last sentence of the note, that there was some vesting language on there. They asked that it be removed. The reason they wanted it removed was, I think there was a couple reasons they wanted it removed. The big issue that I understood was they were concerned mainly if, you know, there's some current plans out there, what happens if we develop a better program? Would they be allowed to slide into a better program? What was the issue with that? The other issue was, if we do get plans, what's the status of those plans? The code, there is a vesting language already in the code in workforce housing, where applications submitted are considered vested. That will be a legal determination. It's not necessarily, I think, an issue that can be ironed out today. But we have prepared a floor amendment, submitted it. It was consistent with the planning board's recommendation, consistent with the land use department's recommendation. Now, I think what was being discussed today is, after the ordinance was introduced, suddenly we received 5 workforce housing plants out of, there's, I think, silence for since 2008-2009, and then the moratorium came on the radar, and suddenly we got 5 plants. The issue of what we're going to do with those plans, I don't think, is a matter that this moratorium should address or does address. I think it's going to be an issue that the Department of Law, or the Office of Law and the Department of Land Use, has to review.
I have Councilman Weiner, Kilpatrick, and then Rutter. Okay, Councilman Weiner, then Kilpatrick.
Thank you. I had an opportunity to chat with Councilman Hollins just before. And I'm with the indulgence of yourself, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hollins, and the others, I have a prepared text I just want to read. I'll pass it out for those, and it's more of a path going forward. I applaud Councilman Penrose Hollins and the Gordon administration for their commitment to affordable housing in Newcastle County. From a planner's perspective, to accomplish our mutually desired goal of affordable housing intermixed with our existing and future housing stock, we must, and I have 5 points. 1. Legislatively remove the institutional impediments adopted as part of our Unified Development Code on December 31st, 1997, which limits housing options to exclusive large lots designated for high-income citizens. 2. Create greater zoning categories which are reflective of each community's existing or planned transit orientation and bike ped friendliness. 3. Legislate by right greater densities in communities which are transit-oriented and bike-ped friendly. 4. Mandate quality design and construction materials in communities to avoid construction of future slums, parentheses, the housing stock which is affordable must seamlessly intermesh with all the other housing, end parentheses. And lastly, 5. Mandate consistency with historic fabric of community character. In summary, once these preconditions are established, government can proverbially, quote, get out of the way, end of provoke, quote, and let private enterprise do what it does best, consistent with the economic law of supply and demand. If we make these legislative changes, the current workforce housing legislation with its onerous regulations will not be needed. It was well intended but did not achieve its goals due to a multiplicity of factors. That's it.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, and please let's stick to the ordinance of the moratorium.
Thank you. First of all, I think all of you know since I've been on council and even when I worked with the General Assembly that I am not a big proponent of the workforce housing ordinance as it is today. I don't think that it gives us what we want in affordable housing, and I don't think that we are doing a service to the people who need this assistance the most. That being said, I also think that we're getting a mixed message today. When the general manager of land use gave her presentation, she talked about studies that were going to be done. Among those studies were going to be workforce housing or affordable housing. I guess I'm not understanding why we would put a moratorium today on an overlay in the code if this and a variety of other things are going to be studied. So if we're saying we're 6 to 9 months on this moratorium, how is that timeline coinciding with the timeline for the new study that's going to be done? So how do we know that the study will be here and recommendations made on workforce housing by the end of this study? So I guess the bottom line is I'm not sure that we need to have a moratorium in order to really change the UDC in the wording for this. I would like to vote for a stay on workforce housing. I will not vote for it if I believe that there is any connection at all between the five plans that have been submitted prior to the moratorium and this moratorium. And I do not think that it's unusual when there's a potential moratorium coming that people that have been working on plans submit them. It happened before when they put the moratorium on the general land use code in order to implement the UDC. We saw the same thing at that point. So I don't think that there's anything sinister about plans going in. I think people want to know that rather than do nothing for 9 months, that they've got something in the pipeline.
Councilman Hollins, as you see, she had a direct question. You already answered that, but she's asking, is the moratorium directly connected to?
Well, maybe I did not. What I do believe is that the five or six plans that you are referring to, I believe there's legitimate concern, and I believe that issue would be resolved. What I'm saying for the third time and not the fourth time, this moratorium, this ordinance does not address that issue. This moratorium addresses the issue that was started when we first started having meetings with the county executive about how we're going to deal with workforce housing legislation in Newcastle County. It had nothing to do with the five or six plans that came along whenever they came along. Now, the other part of that is that the study that was referred to by the general manager, obviously, we can make a change to the code at any point in time. Everything that we're going to do in the code is not contingent upon what the study may or may not say. We will probably take some things from that study and some things we probably will not. But the fact of the matter is, in the very first meeting I had with the general manager, shortly after she came to Newcastle County in that capacity, the discussion then was about workforce housing and that we would start working toward implementing a workforce housing product that would give us measurable and meaningful results. So we didn't wait for the general manager to come here today to get council's approval to do various studies over the entire UDC, and certainly we didn't wait for today before we're going to do other kinds of things. It won't stop with that study and it won't end with that study. So that study possibly could help us with some ideas, but as she also mentioned, if you go down to Montgomery County, Maryland, where we took a lot of our ideas from in the very existing workforce housing that we have today, quite frankly, it's been down there for over 25 years. And when I went to the planning board and what I shared with the members of county council, what happened right over in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, so workforce housing, inclusionary zoning, as it's called in most jurisdictions in this country, is not a new concept. It's not something that where we need to go and spend $200,000 to find out how do you make certain that we have inclusionary zoning in this jurisdiction so that all income levels will have an opportunity to live here. That's all it means, simple as that. What we are hearing today is now that we're going to jeopardize the good faith effort, not only with this county executive, but with myself, because someone now is saying that this legislation is going to do them harm, and I say they cannot prove that. This legislation does not address anything that they did 10 years from now, or anything they did 2 weeks ago. It doesn't have anything to do with this discussion, is my point. So if members of council want to tie that into this, then God bless you, but there's no room for it unless you do another floor amendment to address that issue. And I plan to move forward, and hopefully I have seven members of council who feel the need to go forward, because we need to have a workforce housing, affordable housing concept plan in place in Newcastle County. It's unfortunate that we will have this 6 months moratorium, perhaps a 9 month moratorium, but we need to get it right. And that's all we're trying to do. We want to have some achievable results that we have not seen. And I feel that it's all of our responsibility to be inclusive. And as I said earlier, that's all it's called in other jurisdictions, inclusive zoning. It doesn't have any code names or anything like we try to do here to make it cute or fancy or make it acceptable. It's just the fact that people need to be able to live in Newcastle County and all areas of Newcastle County and not just down Route 9.
Councilman Powers has joined us now. I have Councilman Redden, and I'll come up.
Thank you. For Councilman Holland's sake, I applaud all his work he does on the his ordinance and in the past, and I know his passion for it. The other question I have is, which I don't see in front of me, is when were these applications presented? When were they filed compared to what's going on today? I don't have anything in front of me.
I really don't know, because they are filed with land use, and my point is that
I understand. Right. I understand that. Councilman Holland, believe me. The thing is, I don't have the information in front of me of when they were filed from land use to really let me know, you know, were they done last year? Were they done 6 months ago? Were they done last week? Were they done 2 years ago of filing?
I'm sure they can answer, but I just don't see the relationship with the moratorium.
First, workforce housing application we received, or after introduction of the ordinance. Ordinance was introduced, I believe, on November 12th. The workforce housing plans, I think the first two came in on December 16th. We received three after that, but they were all between after December 16th.
And now?
And we got one last week. Yes.
We need to rush this along a little bit here. We are coming up on the 4 o'clock meeting. I've got Councilman Kilpatrick, Councilman Smiley, and then Councilman Cartier.
Thank you. I understand what Councilman Hollins is saying, that the moratorium should be standalone. The bottom line is there is a question out there about vesting, and the law says that if workforce housing plan is submitted, it's vested. There would be no question as to whether these plans were vested if there was no moratorium ordinance. They're only linked because there is a moratorium ordinance, and now the department has brought up a question about whether these plans that are submitted should be vested or not. So in my mind, they are linked. If we weren't voting on the moratorium, there would be no question that they were vested plans.
Mm-hmm. Councilman Cartier?
Very briefly, commenting on Ms. Jacobson's comments on workforce housing, and it's very sad that it's become such a political football and so controversial, because we want to have an inclusive county, people who grow up here, can live here, find housing opportunities. That's what was driving all the workforce housing debate, and I want to applaud Councilman Hollins for his passion for that issue, and I've always supported that. Just a couple of things. You know, the density bonus, which is 100% for workforce housing, goes from 1.3 dwelling units an acre to a maximum of 2.6. I would hardly call that high density or straining infrastructure at all, okay? In my district, there's a Darley Green is 12 to 14 dwelling units an acre, okay? That's what I talk about, the differences that go on in this county, how what people expect, what they feel is correct or not. It's very variable. Secondly, we adopted it, yes, on the brink of the Great Recession of 2008, and I think that contributed to the failure of those units being produced, as well as other housing units, period. So that's a canard in my mind, that argument, because all construction was affected by this recession, is still affected. I think being an elected official, you know, I'm concerned always with fairness to applicants before this government. I feel it's my role. and I feel I have to remain concerned at all times. And due to the political and highly controversial nature of workforce housing, I'm afraid that, you know, I'm very concerned about fairness to applicants who may be in the system if we go forward with this moratorium or not. Fairness is always a concern for me, and, you know, I remain a little concerned about where, you know, what will happen in the eventuality that we adopt this.
Additional questions, members of the council? Seeing none, turning to the public.
No, I canceled out.
Yeah, he canceled.
Sorry about that.
You got anything?
Thank you for it.
No. Questions, members of the public? Okay. And also, I do want to make a statement. I don't know how many questions we are going to get, but we are up on a 4 o'clock meeting. There will be additional time at 6:30 downstairs at the council meeting for additional comments if we have to get to there. It's unfortunate, but we are up against a 4 o'clock meeting. Make sure you state your name for the recording, and at such time I'll have to cut it off. We'll have to cut it off. Please keep your comments as brief as possible and respectful to the other people that are going to want to talk.
Mark Blake, Vice President of Land Use for GATA, Greater Hokesson Area Development Association. Kind of an unusual position. We're usually fighting with developers, but we believe that if we ask them, as we always do with every project that we've dealt with, to obey the law and actually go beyond that, that we as the county government should also do that and make certain and sure that this moratorium does not impact those plans that were legally filed. I know Mr. Shinetcha is here, and I had the unfortunate duty of working with 175 residents to talk him out of the original workforce housing plan for West Hampton and go for a rezoning. And we've been working literally every week and every other week, twice a week sometimes, and right up until the week before Christmas, meeting with 175 residents over several meetings. And he has agreed to every single concession, every single one of them, to get that rezoning to make the plan the best possible plan, including price points, architecture, things that the county code doesn't even begin to scratch. And I heard last night at County Executive Gordon's meeting that those are some of the things that land use wishes to look at. We've been doing that for 50 years, folks, out in Hokesson, because we do care about how it looks, how it acts, and how it fits the neighborhood. And now he's had to protect his rights by going back and refiling the original workforce housing plan just to cover his butt, to make sure that his rights are protected as a landowner. And, you know, the economy's terrible, we know that. But let's not make it worse by putting, what, 9 months of whatever? If we're gonna revamp the land use and department UDC, do it on the fly like we're doing the rest of it. I don't see where this is a big issue. There's multiple ways to address the workforce housing and affordable homes, and we can show that. But I would suggest that there's enough people in this room that warrants this being put off for at least another 2 weeks. This is the third time I've come down here to attend this meeting, and it's the first time it's been actually held. And because of that, there are a lot of people in this room that are not going to be heard, and 3 minutes is not enough time for each person to address the issues. We're concerned, and we agree with Councilman Hollins. This is a well-intentioned ordinance, workforce housing, poorly, poorly executed by Newcastle County.
Okay, Councilman Hollins.
Let me just say, Mr. Chair, I would hope that the speakers will address the legislation that's being discussed tonight. I think I'm getting offended that people are making all these discussions about what this legislation is not about. There is a way to achieve density in Newcastle County without workforce housing. It's called rezoning. It's ST. What people are doing are using the workforce housing legislation to negotiate in the government and outside of the government. That is not the intent of workforce housing. The workforce housing legislation was to give an opportunity for home ownership in Newcastle County. What you're hearing today has nothing to do with home ownership in Newcastle County. It has everything to do and who invested, who did not invest. And if you want to get the density, forget about workforce housing that you have avoided for the last 3 years and go for the ST zoning and you will get your density that way. That is the legal way to do it. That's the way you always done it. And the workforce housing is just an option. People don't want workforce housing. If developers present that argument to them, do you want workforce housing or do you want ST? They want ST to a person throughout Newcastle County. The intent of workforce housing legislation is to provide for opportunity, not for landowners and developers to use it as a tool to negotiate. And I don't have the time to listen to those the conversations that continue to go around everything that I'm trying to do here. And the folk who is telling me I'm doing a great job and appease me and so forth, forget all of that. let's stick with the issue and stick with the facts. This legislation has nothing to do with half of the argument that's going on here, and quite frankly, it's offensive.
Yeah. I got another question from Member Council. We're going to end up having to cut this off here real soon. Councilman Hall has made some very valid points. I think even a few council members have went a little bit wry on this already on us. The legislation that Councilman Hollins is talking about, he's been very specific in what he's saying and what he's introducing here. Keep your comments directed to it, please. Yes. Councilman Street.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I can't follow you directly because I'm not going to sit here and mince words and play games. And I'm tired of him getting upset, and I'm sick of the whole historical harsh fact here. 1964, public accommodation, civil rights act, and all those things were passed. 40 years later, every time there's a conversation about affordable housing, fairness, and where folks can live, the room's full, it's contentious, which tells me 40 years from now, unless we change our perspective, we're going to still need public accommodations act, we're still going to need the civil rights act. And until developers, government come together and actually act in fairness instead of their own self-interest, it's a sad, sad time. And I'm hoping that as we move into the night, we'll let folks come in, whatever they want to say about the legislation be said, voted up or down, will the council be the will of council, but I'm not going to, consistent with what he said, I don't want to listen to a lot of malarkey, and I know it's a whole lot of mischief and, quite frankly, a whole lot of resentment for other people and where they live in their heart, and I don't think we should have to endure that.
Okay.
I'm not going to endure it.
Thank you. We take our questions, again, specific to the ordinance, not a specific plan. We're not looking to argue any other external points. The ordinance, specifically. Who has comments on the ordinance? Well, I know, right here, and then...
I live in the district.
Okay. A couple comments, briefly.
Larry Dixon, I'm on here on behalf of UAW, the property behind there. There's 9.1 acres, which some workforce investment housing is supposed to go in there if it's approved. Now, that is a prime land. Ex-UAW Chrysler workers fought and paid for that land. It was worth $1.2 million less than 5 years ago. We lost over 50% of that value. And for us to be viable here at the Union Hall and to me to take my job on and to help the community like we do, I mean, tomorrow we're going to have 150 to 200 people go through our food bank. The Special Olympics had their dance there last Sunday. I mean, we're a community. You talk about, you know, businesses. We are a business, but we're a nonprofit. We're there to take the community. If we cannot sell that land, we're going to lose our viability. To all the retirees, I mean, you yourself, I mean, I've helped your mother. I mean, surviving spouses come in me and crawling in there, walkers. We need the space. We need to stay there for the community. I mean, look what the Chrysler workers have done to Newcastle County and the GM workers, the Avon workers, all over this county. We need the money to help the citizens of this county. And it's not the auto workers we're helping. That's 10% of the people that walk through that food bank. I mean, Special Olympics. We do stuff for free all the time. Surviving spouses, they have a death. What they have is a repass. We sit there and let them come in and use our facility.
And I'm going to go to a couple more there. I know what you're saying, but it's still not conducive. Exactly. And I absolutely hear your passion, but still we're directed exactly to just the ordinance. I got to go to a couple comments. I have to cut it off. I'm impeding right now on Council President Bullock's. Again, the ordinance, only the ordinance, please. Yeah. And then tonight we'll have additional comments, and that'll be open to every single person. But
my name is Elena Bandy. I'm with UAW 1183. We have 9 acres that relates to this ordinance. And the fact is, we need clarification that those permits will be vested. We need clarification that's going to be grandfathered before any moratorium vote.
Good government is fair government. My name is Ann Klein. I'm retired from Chrysler also. I continue to live in Newcastle County. I feel that everyone should have good and fair housing. However, what is of no concern to some of the people in this room is fair, and I feel like people, based on the rules, couldn't know that you were thinking of making a change to the direction that the county was going and invested a lot of time and money and have property that they presumed to develop based on the rules set out by Newcastle County. So it's not fair to tell them that you spent money for studies and plans and say, oh, that's really a shame because we're going to go in a different direction. That's where I don't think it's fair.
Okay, I got to have one last comment from the public. I'll have to cut it off. Remember that we'll be downstairs at 6:30 because I got a council member and I have to give preference back to the council member. Yes.
Chris Castagno, I represent the UAW for real estate. And with respect to Councilman Hollins, I think the angst that you see here is the fact that we can't get an answer. One of the ones I know for sure that I represent has been at the county for more than the 20 days allowable to get an answer back. That is more than 30 days, or 20 days, I should say. So that's the resentment or the angst that you might be hearing here. I think everybody here would really want to see an improvement to a better workforce housing product. But why can't we get clarity on the vested properties that are before council and before the land use department now? That's the major issue.
Again, this legislation does not address that issue. You have a viable interest and an interest
we can't
that
get response.
While this legislation doesn't guarantee that response, it doesn't take that response away from you. You're asking council through legislation to get involved with an executive branch of government to give you an answer that you desire. I hope you get that answer. But it's not this legislation that's denying anybody anything. I'm aware of the unit that UAW is trying to sell their hall. There's an application to put 20 houses there. Four of those houses are now recommended to be workforce housing. So that's another issue between the applicant, the landowner. This legislation doesn't address that for any application, whether it be the UAW hall or the West Hampton place that the lawyer wrote about, or any other. This legislation does not deal with that. So people have been misled to come here tonight to say that if this legislation passes, somehow their application will be denied. They were told that it's wrong, it's a lie. That is not what this legislation does.
And Councilman Powers, and then again, I have to cut it off after Councilman Powers. I have to turn it over to Council President Bullock for his meeting. And again, we'll convene downstairs and everybody can be heard at that point. Okay, Councilman Powers.
I just I think something just has to make sure it's clear. I think where some of these people are pretty upset is more just making sure they're grandfathered in. And I don't know why they would think any different until a law is passed. How can, if they've already put it in, doesn't matter if it was said a few weeks ago, it hasn't been voted on. So right now, what, and I think Councilwoman Kilpatrick brought up, is we're going under the old rules. Now, if somebody else is administrating it different, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's the
but that goes back to constitutional law. You're taking something before you have any chance to take it.
The code addresses that issue. It's in the code. The investment issue is in the code. We're not removing anything from the code. We're still operating under that code. It's just the fact that this moratorium is for the exact purpose of the moratorium. We did not change the code at all. So the code still exists.
I'm agreeing with you, but something put out there.
Because
something's
different. People have been purposely misled, and that's what we're hearing here today. People that are being misled. Folk are thinking that somehow, if this legislation passes, that the UAW hall will not be sold and all these services will be lost. There's nothing.
Okay, right now I'm going to Council President Bullock and then we'll be adjourned.
Councilman Holland, you plan on calling for the vote this evening?
Yes, I do.
So be it.
I do.
Okay, I need a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And remember, we'll all convene downstairs and